Oh, hey, Rocketeers. I'm Karen Tongson, filling in for our lead gay, Guy Branum. And welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist and creepy, eerie prognosticator of the death of celebrity relationships, Winter Mitchell.
Tis I. Hello, hello. Tis I.
And we also have in the house, covering for Margaret, who's on maternity leave, film critic, co-host of Linoleum Knife, the Linoleum Knife podcast, and now officially the special guest star, a.k.a. Charo of Pop Rocket, Alonzo Duralde.
Hello. It's hard to live up to that Charo-ness, but I'll do my best.
Well, we'll have to get a few more coochies in as the weeks progress.
I'll do her hit single, Olé, Olé.
Oh, that's
okay,
right.
There we go. Coming up in this week's show, it's our most controversial episode yet, and we have stirred some controversy. I don't know how I feel about that statement. But what we are going to do is share our most unpopular and polarizing pop culture opinions. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Winter Mitchell, What have you seen through your crystal ball?
Oh, God. You know, rest in peace, Chris Pratt. Anna Faris.
Yeah, R.I.P.
They never had a collective portmanteau, did they?
No, I was trying to figure one out just in the time allotted, and
Craris.
It was nothing.
Frat might not be too bad, but
yeah,
not
that
to
was
force
a...
you to talk about it. But.
No. I'm just like, I don't like to use my powers in the space of, you know, where the energy, I haven't measured out what energy I'm pulling in because my power is so strong.
It is really scary powerful.
Yeah, it is getting, like, I feel like I should get a development deal at NBC at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I would watch me.
Yeah. For those of you who haven't been paying attention, Winter called this many months ago, in fact, on our Facebook
page. By the way, I'm not
page.
Happy about calling the end of a relationship, so let anybody think that I'm like a narcissist.
You're getting no glee out
no,
of this.
No glee at all. I think they're both super great. I'm super bummed, but I hate it when behavioral indications from photos, which, look, we don't know exactly what happened, but then it's the cues from there, and then it's the junket circuit, which he is all about aggressively, man. And it's just like that energy. You can feel it when someone's when they're
prying
jamming.
Away, when their eyes are.
If only
not
you could
focused.
Apply this to the stock market. You know?
I would love to do
all
that.
Those tea leaves.
No, okay, so like, sorry about that, guys. I mean, like, I wish you both all the best, not that you care. But really fast. So wait, my All About For Real, though, is about Desus and Mero, which is the weekly, like, Vice Lens late night show where these two guys from the Bronx, I'm still trying to figure out, like, their beginnings. I feel like it's from Twitter because I've been following Desus Nice forever. I feel like since the beginning of Twitter, but they're so funny, and the show really just follows them having reactions to the day's news. Lately, it's obviously Trump, but they have this like this bit they do about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and they had Goat Week to compete with Shark Week. So they had crazy goat attacks since they couldn't compete with Shark Week in terms of programming. They just did Goat Week and had people send in crazy goat videos.
So but, real goats, not greatest of all time.
No. Real goats. Okay. And it's every night they are able to just capture like this comedy that's hysterical, and they have a lot of celebrity guests, and I just think they're I don't know what else to say about it. I've given you a lot of information.
How did
them.
You stumble upon them? I mean, is it just like you were up late at night and you're like, let's flip through the channels?
It's
let's
interesting
see what's up.
That you bring that up, Karen, because I don't even have Viceland.
Exactly.
I barely have cable anymore. I'm so over it. But my buddies and I, we all share a server that has every time we stream something, it goes into the server. So my buddy uploaded Desus and Mero, and I've been watching, like, I think we watched 10, and it's literally hold your stomach in laughing. It's better than The Daily Show. I'm sorry. I'm just, like, over him. I've given him so many chances. Unpopular opinion.
She's already starting.
I've already started.
We haven't even gotten
to that part. But, like, I just think that for late-night television, if you want to, like, release, if you want to laugh at the black Twitter, how black Twitter feels about things is so magical and beautiful and powerful because we're so outspoken. And these are those guys without doing too much. They've got a little bit of style and flair to them. They're hilarious.
amazing. Now we all need to tap into Winter's server to take a look at it.
My TiVo, I've been trying to get I'm Sorry off of True TV because I like Andrea Savage. And of the four that I TiVo'd, three of them were Impractical Jokers and one was like a Carbonaro project. Like, damn it, True TV, get it together. You.
Get your shit together, True TV. Well, wait, True TV was Guy's network. Well, don't do whatever you want.
Yeah,
anything and everything you want.
Anything and everything you want. Bring his show back.
And on that note, as he sets the house on fire, Alonzo.
Oh, God, week two, and I'm already in trouble.
What are you all about this week?
Well, I'm catching up on some reading, and I have been going through this fascinating book called How to Survive a Plague by David France.
Oh, yeah.
He directed the Academy Award-nominated documentary of the same name a couple years ago, which I'm a huge fan of. I have screened it for a queer cinema class that I was teaching, and just it's a movie I've been pressing on everybody. It's still on Netflix. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. It's amazing. And then this book is, you know, France was not a filmmaker originally. He was a journalist. He covered a lot of this stuff in New York City as it was happening. And then that was his first film. But now this is the book that really allows him to go deep in this story. And reading it just makes me realize how every documentary we've ever seen could have a companion volume to go with it that just goes that there's much, much more. There's always more to the story. There's more people to talk to. The people that you do talk to have more to say that you didn't fit in there. So even if you saw like a 14-hour Ken Burns documentary about, you know, chewing gum, there would be a whole encyclopedia of stuff that he didn't get to that you would still want to like read up on. It's fascinating. So I'm really loving the book.
And so explain to our listeners who don't remember what The Plague refers to.
That would be about...
what precisely
kids,
the doc...
There was this thing called AIDS that happened. Yeah. And it's still happening, but it's not happening the way it used to happen, where it was just like killing everybody, especially
right.
everybody who was gay and living in a big city. The basically what both the book and the movie are about is the formation of ACT UP and how you had activists who were taking their treatments into their own hands, who were going directly to the government and directly to Big Pharma and saying, hey, these protocols aren't working. You cannot stick dying people in a test where they are going to maybe take a placebo. You guys have these things in the pipeline that you're not giving us. We are dropping dead, and we would rather take a medicine that might or might not work than do nothing, because nothing is what you're offering us. Mm-hmm. So if you are all about hashtag resisting right now, I think this is a great sort of blueprint of how you can, in fact, fight City Hall.
It's actually like, what was the name of the movie? What was the name of the HBO movie? It was
The Normal Heart?
The Normal Heart. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit more East Coast centric, but it still feels like it was the same energy.
Yeah,
no
Larry Kramer is a character in this story.
Right,
absolutely.
Right. So San Francisco, the energy you see, it's like heartbreaking because it's the 80s in New York, but then it's the same way. It was the same way in San Francisco.
And LA.
Yeah.
What was the name of that ABC series? When We Rise, right?
When We Rise.
So,
yeah.
I mean, so like there are different iterations of this story, obviously, that have been, transformed for television or HBO, The Normal Heart, When We Rise, How to Survive a Plague. And I think what sounds to me like the really kind of fascinating component of the book is that these other characters we encounter who have different approaches to resistance or bringing attention to the AIDS crisis are contextualized in a way through the kind of more intensive activist efforts.
Obviously,
the thing about
ACT UP is that it was always non-hierarchical. So you have a lot of people who are not necessarily on the same page when it comes to making the change they want to make. But you have these specific groups who are devoting themselves to things like the science of it all and figuring out how the medication works and what's happening with the disease. You have people who really start learning to understand the government bureaucracy and all of that stuff and how you start wading through it. And the end of the story is that basically those people all wind up getting subsumed into the system and overhauling the system because they wind up knowing more about the subject than, you know, the people that the government had working there before knew or that people at certain, you know, drug companies knew. So they become the new AIDS establishment, this very well-educated, angry, oftentimes, you know, HIV positive themselves, group of individuals who, you know, who through their radicalism become the new norm and fixed it. Or at least, you know, made a big step towards fixing it, you know.
And we all need new primers for the resistance, so please do check it out. Okay.
Are we on a pledge drive, Karen?
Well, you know, I mean, everyone has their style. And my style happens to be very kind of pledgy, dick habit, whatever.
Okay, I like it. I like that. I like that.
Was going to go full on, like, lesbro here and talk about baseball. And I was going to bring up the Dodgers' historic 50-game run.
I would have nodded politely.
Yes, 43-7. First time any team has achieved that since 1912. But since I am a superstitious baseball fan, I don't want to talk too much about it. Mm-hmm. I want to stay silent around the good vibes. And instead, I'm going to talk about lesbian drama and bourbon.
Yay.
Yes.
Yes. I don't know how many of you have encountered this story or not, but there is some serious drama about the brand Bullet Bourbon, which is my preferred brand, and which is also the preferred brand of the cheesy character played by Naomi Watts on Gypsy. So Hollis Bullet, who's sixth generation Bullet family, the heiress of bourbon and the daughter of the founder, Tom, claims she's being squeezed out of the family biz since she came out as a lesbian.
Oh.
Now, the best part of this is that she has the picture that comes with this story. I think it was on Queerty. Is that her girlfriend is this like kind of sexy silver fox butch lesbian named Cher.
Nice.
So, you know, and basically, you know, Hollis and Cher have been breaking this story on Hollis's social media. It's like, as I've described it, it's like lesbian Falcon Crest, only with bourbon instead of wine.
So do we not drink it now?
Well, no. I think the thing that came out
very
in all
good
of this
question.
Is that there's actually a parent company that owns Bullet now, Diageo. They probably own every booze.
Diageo.
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 Okay, Diageo. And so now they own the brand, and they fired back, and they're just claimed that, you know, they just couldn't negotiate a new contract with Hollis. It had nothing to do with her sexuality. But for Hollis's part, all over her Facebook feed and all over her posts, she's been talking about how she's basically been excised from family photos and all of that, and that it is a personal queer thing. I do want to read a little bit from her statement, from her post. She says, after 10 years of experience, one could conclude that no one knew what to do with a non-straight woman besides ignore me and reap the benefits of my relationships and sales. Shortly after coming out over a decade ago, not one family photo has been taken of me or with me and Cher with the core Bullet family. Anyway.
I love this. I love
it. Maybe Mary Chaney will hire her over to Coors.
I know. Ooh. I feel like I'm going to, you know, Jill Soloway, if you're listening, I'm going to pitch a kind of, like I said,
I would watch
Falcon Crest
the
for you.
F out of this.
Right?
Okay? Like, first of all, would watch. Yeah. Second of all, if it's on cable, so much sex. I want a lot of sex.
Oh, yeah. It has to be a cable show,
okay,
obviously.
It has to be a cable show.
But if you did pitch this as a drama, nobody would believe that the family name was actually Bullet.
But that makes it even cooler.
They'd be like, that's a little on the nose. Could we come with something?
Who would play her?
Oh, I don't know. Well, so Hollis Bullet is like very blonde Southern debutante.
How old is she?
It's difficult to tell.
Uh-oh.
I'm assuming she's like maybe late 30s. I hope I'm not offending Hollis.
Nicole Kidman.
Or we could just like drag Naomi Watts out again.
I wouldn't mind seeing Naomi Watts pulling that.
But the sexy salt and pepper Cher, the silver fox butch, who are we going to get for Cher?
We could Sharon Stone.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Or like, I don't know. Maybe
Sharon
we just
Stone.
Maybe we can, you know, make Jane Lynch drama it up or something like that. I don't know.
I feel like it's more Sharon Stone.
Could Judith Light cut her hair between seasons of Transparency?
Oh, that could be interesting. I think that
what about Meryl Streep?
Oh, Meryl.
Well, always.
Yeah, always. She could do that. That'd be interesting. Yeah.
She could play all the roles.
With her Devil Wears Prada hair.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay, anyway, before we reveal too much about this show, I think we need to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Hey guys, this is Adam Conover. You may know me from my True TV show, Adam Ruins Everything. Well, guess what? Now we're doing a podcast version right here on Maximum Fun. What we do is we take all the interesting, fascinating experts that we talk to for just a couple minutes on the show, and we sit with them for an entire podcast, really going deep and getting into the fascinating details of their work. Find Adam Ruins Everything wherever you get your podcasts or at MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And that's it.
So, oh, well done.
We're short ones. So just, there are no puppies or babies or
nothing.
Anything gestating, right? Okay. Just a reminder, by the way, Rocketeers, we're open for Jumbotrons. Have your message read by us. It could be anything. You could be proposing to somebody. You could be leaving a passive-aggressive note to your neighbor, whatever it is. Just go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Okay, so there has been this meme that's been trafficking around the interwebs, and I'm not sure who started it. It's a pretty intuitive one. I know who started it on our Pop Rocket Facebook page, and that's Manpreet Dhaliwal. And that is the question... about what unpopular opinions you might hold about popular culture. Now, one of the things that I always, you know, feel as a kind of consumer of pop culture is that most of my opinions seem to be pretty unpopular,
yeah.
Honestly. Because I like really bad shit, trashy shit. And beyond that, I think that, you know, I like put more emphasis on things or like have more of a venerable relationship to things that might be construed as guilty pleasures, etc. But how is it possible to not have an unpopular opinion about pop culture? As a group, before we started taping tonight, we talked about and we determined that we had two core items of popular culture that we were all in agreement about and probably have a collective unpopular opinion about. The first is Game of Thrones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's into it here.
Yeah.
Haven't seen a second of it.
Okay, so we're not going to talk about it.
Yay.
But the second item we're not collectively too fond of, I hear, might be a kind of a controversial choice because it is beloved by our Max Fun guru, Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we are not that into wet, hot American summer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know, like, our producer Christian here is like, I'm really into wet, hot. So what is it about, I mean, I could start, but I want to hear from you guys, like, what is it that is your switch point or turn off point around wet, hot, the whole series?
I mean, for me, it's weird because, you know, I look back at the roots of that group and, you know, I thought The State was okay. I liked, remember Exit 57?
Yeah.
Which was Amy Sedaris and, mm-hmm. and those guys, mm-hmm. you know, and so I'm open to that idea. I like the idea of what it wants to be, this sort of spoof of Meatballs and kind of 80s movies. And there are a few moments in that film I think are funny. I like the whole Rick Springfield montage. But that movie, and then it was really driven home when I saw They Came Together.
Yeah.
I feel like that it traffics in funny in quotation marks. Like you're supposed to, it's when you're watching something and it's this notion of, well, we don't actually have to tell you a joke. We're just going to sort of present this thing that's absurd and we're either going to super point out the absurdity or we're just going to sort of revel in it and you're going to know it's a joke.
I think they had a lot more fun when they were younger. I thought I loved The State because it was on MTV and that was my first introduction to them. And they did Stella, which I liked Stella. Unpopular opinion. I love Stella.
They'd already lost me by that point.
See, they lost a lot of people. But I think that when it's absurdist and it's structured like in a skit, mm-hmm. I think that they're good. When it's like 10 skits tied together that never end with a narrative that just keeps going on and on. And now it is on and on because they've got this new one out, the 10 Years Later reunion, which is just a pile of literally like, it's like,
I can't even deal with the GIF for that. Like, kind of, you know, I'm just like, really? That's the best you can do to try to entice me. And it has Amy Poehler in it, who I adore and love. But it's
and
just like...
just they're all struggling. I don't get the point. And then I was having a debate about with friends about it. They were like, that's the point. It's supposed to be, you know, at this point ridiculous that they're playing 26-year-olds. And I was like, no, it's just a little like it's over. And a lot of critics have said the same thing. It doesn't mean it make it right, but that's my opinion.
Well, it's something that should totally be in my wheelhouse the whole entire time. I mean, that is essentially like my core pleasure center is like 80s, 70s, 80s nostalgia, you know, kind of dorky horn dog teen stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know,
How many times have you seen Little Darlings, Karen?
Oh, I mean, come on. Little Darlings is so formative. I mean, what hotter movie is there for like a young, tingly, budding homosexual?
Blue Lagoon?
Well, I mean, not for a young homosexual.
Oh, okay.
Well,
Christopher Atkins actually gets
a lot of full frontal in that.
Oh, yeah, it's true. There is. I mean, I do remember that that's one of those things that made me feel dirty every time.
Little Darlings for the young ladies, sure.
Yes. But yeah, exactly. So I figured, oh, this should be something that is totally tickles my pleasure center. And I was just like, this is just frankly boring.
Yeah.
And it was, I didn't find the absurdity funny.
No.
And I find a lot of absurdity funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried watching it in every possible circumstance that would, you know, kind of fluff my experience. And, you know, I love most everything that I watch while I'm working out just because it's more fun than the working out. And it just didn't work for me in that way. And so,
did you see it when it came out?
No, I did not see it when it came out. So, and, you know, and tried the series and everything. It was just, ugh. Anyway.
If I'm not responding more to something that had, like, gay makeouts for Bradley Cooper, something's wrong.
I mean, that's truthfully, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I know.
Even that is not dragging it across
that's
the finish line for
exactly.
me.
That's exactly. The thing is like, it's basically what I told the text group today. It's like all these people can get together anytime they want if they all agree to be together, and people throw money at them and they do it, and it's, you know, it's a good payday. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those are all really famous people. They obviously love that show, and I mean, love getting together. Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think that there's actually some beauty in that, but I just don't care for them.
Like, my favorite David Wayne movie is probably Role Models, which is probably...
Oh, my God. Role Models, the first time around, it doesn't age well. But the first time I saw Role Models, I was crying.
Yeah, I haven't revisited it. But, definitely, I think it lands, and it's the most sort of structured and scripted of his stuff. It doesn't go off in a sort of loony Stella land the way that Wet Hot does.
But it was hilarious, and it doesn't get enough credit. Anyway.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, you know, I think that, you know... that it's clear we're not going to be rushing off to, you know, have Wet Hot parties anytime
soon. Does anybody care? I mean, like,
yeah.
I wonder if listeners care about that.
Like, but like I said, I'd be curious to hear how Jesse responds to our dissing of Wet Hot, because
I like everybody individually.
In other things.
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, maybe they're the nouveau Brat Pack in that way.
Sure.
Where once St. Elmo's fire happened, it's just the end.
Exactly. That really killed it. There was too much coke on that set. They're like, this is one too many binges, you guys. You gotta split up.
Well, so we had multiple responses to this question, obviously, on the Facebook group. And one of the kind of hotter subthreads that developed was around Eric Tran's post that he thought Friends and Seinfeld were basically overrated or not that great. Like, do you agree or disagree? Is that, you know, is that a...
The thing for me about Seinfeld, I loved it at the time. And when I watch it now, I'm so aware of the structure. Like, I can so feel the pins falling together. And, like, you know that it's like watching this sort of Rube Goldberg thing. You're like, oh, there goes the ball. Oh, and now it's knocking over
the
pins.
Orange juice.
And that, exactly. Yeah. So I can see where it's all going to ping together. Mm-hmm. And that takes out some of the fun.
And that bothers you. And frankly, I found myself having a really difficult time just binging Seinfeld.
Yeah. It's not bingy like people think it is.
It's a lot of misanthropy to take in at a large dose.
Yes.
It's like when you're trapped on an airplane and it's like, oh, here's Seinfeld, like, for 3 hours. Like, you know, it doesn't offer that same kind of, like, pleasurable release. Whereas, frankly, I could just endlessly watch Friends episodes
I'm
flying. It's
that's,
so easy.
That's cozy television,
down,
for sure.
Yeah, it goes down like warm milk. I don't know how you get... I mean, Friends, I happen to like Friends, and I don't think that is an unpopular opinion. I think it is a particularly wheelhouse popular opinion.
I was square in the Friends demo and somehow never watched it until, like, toward the very end. Like, it became this sort of point of pride that I'd never seen it after a certain point, like in year four. But then somewhere around the time where, like, they all go to England for somebody's wedding.
It was Ross and Emily's wedding.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, that's when I started watching. So, I was not invested.
You were
midway
late. That's like
though,
midway
right?
point.
Okay.
No, I think Friends, I took to Friends more quickly than I took to Seinfeld at the time. So I really feel like also like some programming specifically before 2000 was of its time. And I think Seinfeld was of its time, and I think Friends was of its time.
Yeah, Cheers feels more dateless than
those. Yeah, yeah. So I think Seinfeld is a very cerebral show. And I think it's so regional specific of a specific type of people that it's just like, and you have to follow their relationships to know what's going on. You have to really just like watch it from the beginning. And I always felt like it was truly an adult show, but Friends, it felt more accessible. And so, I mean, I'll be honest with you, it didn't get good until season two, and it started getting terrible season eight. So there was only like a good 6 years out of 10 years that Friends was good, which is a better average than most.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty solid.
That's
that's
like how many episodes? Like 400 episodes or something.
Something like that.
Something like that.
The one that was the 400th
episode. The one that was the 400th episode.
I mean, I think that definitely Seinfeld is a kind of time capsule. It feels like a historical document when you're watching it. I loved it at the time, and I thought it was really kind of smart and incisive, but it is one of those things that feels, you know, I don't know if it's cerebral would be the word that I would choose. I mean, when it comes to cerebral, I can watch endless Frasier episodes in part because of the kind of slapstick of that.
Seinfeld really felt brainy.
Seinfeld felt like it was as close as American TV got to, say, a Woody Allen movie at times.
Yeah.
But maybe it was just because, oh, it's New York Jews complaining about things. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Or to absurdist theater, perhaps.
True, yeah, yes. Maybe
a no, bit. But there were also scenarios... there were also scenarios that felt relatable. Some of the stuff, like some the other things, were just really far fetched.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's on like
Friends was a little bit more based in reality.
Yeah, I mean, the question that I have about this particular meme, though, the unpopular opinion about popular culture, is it? Are you basically stating an opinion that's not popular to the masses, or that's not critically like an acceptable?
I think
opinion?
It's the masses. I think.
Because, like, I don't like The Wire.
I mean, I've never seen one second.
Well, I mean, I tried to watch it.
And people quote it. And I'm cool.
I've still never seen it. And I know I need to, like, it's one of those ones that I'm saving for when I'm in the vault with two pairs of glasses, like Burgess Meredith on The Twilight Zone. Because I know I need to get to it, but I haven't had time.
Well, so all three of us, so none of us. Like, well, I tried to watch The Wire. And I really, really tried. I was like, I know that this is one of the most stirring, like, important things. I need to watch it. And I tried so hard, and I was just like, I give up. I can't
do
this. You know,
I think that you have to have a certain capacity for the amount of darkness that I think some of those prestige crime shows are giving you. Like, so many people will watch all of them or won't watch them at all. Mm-hmm. And it is unpopular to be like, you haven't seen The Wire?
Yeah, I mean, especially as someone who's sort of who's a pop culture scholar.
Yeah.
I have to admit, because how many times do I have to read about The Wire is like a Dickensian serial something like that?
It's a Russian novel. Yeah. It is one of those ones that like, you know, fancy people are expected to have watched. And I feel bad about not having gotten there yet. And I totally mean to. It's just, you know, I have to finish Glow,
time,
you know.
Right,
exactly.
I can't keep up.
Yeah. So we've now firmly established, according to the Winter Mitchell principle, that we're talking about, like, what is mass popular.
Yeah, because I think that it's
have an unpopular opinion.
There are so
about.
Few things that even the critical voice is unanimous about. Like
like Crash,
for instance.
Yes.
No, I think critics are pretty unanimous. They
hated it. Hated it.
No. But getting it winning best pick. I think best picture. Yeah. That's what I.
Yeah, but critics don't get to vote for that. That was
right.
That's their peers in the industry.
That was the worst movie. Of that decade.
Oh, it was terrible.
See, like, if I sat here and I was like, I really loved Crash, y'all would be like...
That would be an
unpopular
opinion.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, Roger Ebert, like, attacked my husband in print because Dave goofed on Crash. And Roger Ebert thought that was a super important movie. And, of course, Dave was just delighted that Roger Ebert knew his name, you know.
Wow. Oh,
my. Yeah, no, he took that movie super seriously.
Super seriously.
But you know, like somebody that I know, or one of the Facebook groups I'm on, there was a discussion about Detroit, you know, and how that's been sort of a lot of different opinions about it. And somebody posted Richard Brody's review from The New Yorker. And then in the comments, all anybody could talk about was that in passing, Richard Brody had slagged Schindler's List. And everybody was like, what? Wait. right. How dare he? You know, yeah. And so even a movie that's sort of considered as unassailable as that, you can find somebody in the critical realm who will say no to it. So, yeah, I think we're talking more about what the folks, mm-hmm. what the mass public thinks about things.
Yeah. Well, so given that we know those parameters, what do each of you have as your perhaps most unpopular opinion about pop culture? Because I can think, you know, we've talked about TV quite a bit. Like, popular music is an arena where there's obviously, oh, yeah. like, always kind of a prevailing sentiment.
Sure.
You know.
Today I posted an Instagram of Titus Andromedon wearing a cowboy hat and holding corn, and the meme was, I hate country music. Every time it comes on, I can't stand it. And then it was Dolly Parton, Jolene, and then it was him in that photo. You have to see it to understand. Anyway, that's to me an example of an unpopular opinion. Like, I don't like country music except for, like, this specific era that is really just tied to, like, when I was around to hear it. So, mm-hmm. 82 to 89.
Yeah, like being a little kid. Like, yeah, I kind of really like country from that era, too.
Yeah.
Your big crossover stars like Dolly and Kenny Rogers,
yeah.
The Gambler and all
yeah.
that. Yeah, and even,
they
you know,
were cool.
The Charlie Daniels
yes.
band.
Even Lionel's attempt at like a country song stuck
yes.
on you.
That wasn't, that really is a country song.
Yeah. So for totes, for real.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it, but totally. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. I mean, my unpopular opinion, music-wise, is that I'm just not into U2.
I'm so there with you, sister. I can't even deal.
Joshua Tree and later, I got nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's
I like you the see, early stuff.
That's yeah. the thing. Is the three of us are like way too much on the same page. And none of you are willing to throw down about like, I love you too. I think that they're the greatest band of the century.
I think it works. I think it works for this for purposes of this episode. We can always have a part two. But listen, yeah. like, I'm sorry. I just don't give a shit what they do. I also really am still
take your sunglasses off,
yeah,
Bono.
No. He can do whatever he wants. But what I don't want is the what they did when they put the album on your iPhone
oh,
when you
God.
Got it. I was so offended by that.
That may have been the tipping point where now people could have this opinion out loud that they don't
yes,
want to.
Yes, because it was something that you didn't just publicly talk about before, I guess.
I remember when Joshua Tree came out, Rolling Stone, I think, made the joke that they started taking group photos where they all looked like they were about to deliver the Gettysburg Address. Like, they just got super serioso all the time.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, Bono would go to interviews talking about how, I'm reading The Way of the South. It's like,
yeah,
oh, shut
God,
up.
Stop.
Yeah. Just shut up.
Yeah.
Well, your house is sliding down Malibu, but you won't reinforce it or something. At the yeah. beach. I don't follow the civic interest of Malibu closely.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that someone else shared that opinion on the Facebook page. Crystal Davis Pascal really also agrees that U2 is pretty much meh. There are some of the other things that people brought up were Solange versus Beyonce.
I'm sorry. I'm so Solange.
Solange.
I'm Solange. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't even care who knows it.
Yeah. Well, that's an unpopular opinion, you guys, I think, for yep. the popular masses.
Listen, I think that I like Beyonce and I respect Beyonce. Let me say that. I totally have respect for her as an artist and everything she's done, especially everything she's done for the Black community. You know, she is an icon. But I'm also like, you know, okay, I got it. And mm-hmm. with Solange, I'm getting something new. And mm-hmm. I feel like Solange's voice was kind of trying to be out there for the longest time, and now she's gotten to a place of confidence that, you know, I don't even really compare them. It's just like, it's like Solange is her own thing. I listen to her way more than I listen to Beyonce.
I'm with you. I respect Beyonce. I like the idea of Beyonce.
Yes.
I like the idea of like this amazing, you know, intelligent
yes.
and powerful Black woman sort
yes.
of running the show.
Yes.
I just wish I liked more of the music.
Yeah.
And it's not that I hate it. I just, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't grab me, and she doesn't like move my world in the way that I wish she did when I hear people who like Beyonce talk about Beyonce.
Right.
And I'm compelled by Beyonce's music. I probably like her stuff more than both of you do, but I do. But I'm not of this. I'm not of a worshipful stance. I don't take a worshipful stance towards her. I understand her, you know, impact on the broader popular culture, and I do admire her for that.
Yes.
So,
totally.
But you know, I think that, you know, to bring it back to goats, greatest of all time. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, yes, obviously she's going to fulfill a particular role in the pantheon for everything that she's done.
For
but,
sure.
You know, but yeah. So you heard it here first, Rocketeers. We all hate Beyonce.
Oh, Jesus.
Very unpopular opinion.
Please
that's
going to
be somebody's takeaway.
Don't come at me. You know what? Who I like more than both of them? Rihanna.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But it's like, is that an unpopular opinion? No.
I don't know. I don't think it is, but I do think that that's one of those like middle ground opinions, because it is about one of the things that we're doing when we have these conversations is to parse out these different territories of taste culture.
Yeah, but somebody's right? going to say, why can't you love them all? And it's like, of course you can love them
you
all.
You can love them all, but like it's within I think it's within a certain zone of folks who like will say you have to like The Wire, or a certain zone of folks who say like, you know, prefer Rihanna to either Solange or Beyonce. You know, I think that speaks. I think that there's a particular sort of amongst like a lot of African American scholars I know who are into popular culture and popular music also have a really powerful preference mm-hmm. for Rihanna over mm-hmm. Beyonce and Solange. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there are certain performers who just sort of become the air. You know, they're everywhere, and you go to the mall, you go to a restaurant, you go in the world, and their music is there, and you don't have to like it, you don't have to hate it, it's just part of your daily life. And then there's those artists that you actually have to look for a little and seek out, and you know, and dig a little and see what they mean to you. And so I feel like we're given Beyonce constantly.
Yeah.
And we can't escape her. Like, she's just this, she is this phenomenon that is occurring. And if you want Solange, you have to go look for Solange.
It's true. Mm-hmm. I follow her on her Instagram, and her stories come up a lot because she sings to the Instagram story, which is like, and then she goes live and she does like little concerts, like 3-4 minutes. It's pretty dope. I'm sorry. Like, that's what I want. I want a mysterious figure giving me little bits, like little snacks, like a little snack trail towards some goodness. That's what she's doing. She's like, I'm working on this now with Kendrick Lamar. And it's just like, it's not even overdone or overdressy. It looks like New Orleans. You know, the lens is always a little bit fogged over.
The Sonic snack trail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real Shoney's.
Well, Alonzo, as a film critic, though, I'm sure that you constantly are berated for your opinions about popular culture.
Yes.
But I'm wondering what is the thing where, like, you know, you thought, oh, shit, I'm going to get some death threats or whatever about this particular
I mean,
film.
You know, thankfully, like, I think my biggest stands were all about movies that happened that sort of predate the internet. Like, people still love to relitigate the Best Picture race of 1994 because that was the year that Forrest Gump beat out both Pulp Fiction and The Shawshank Redemption.
It deserved to.
Oh my God.
And I am firmly team 4 Weddings and a Funeral.
Okay.
So,
wait, those were the movies that were nominated that year?
Yeah, and I
that
forget
was
what
a good
I
was, year.
That
I forget
was a
what the
good
fifth
year.
One was.
Oh, I didn't know it was 4 Weddings and a Funeral. Oh, that was a tough year.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really overall happy with Forrest Gump. People who hate Forrest Gump creep me out.
Oh, well, see, that's I don't know if it's an unpopular opinion that you actually like Forrest Gump now or
you know, I don't know either
unpopular
because
that I don't.
I thought after enough time had passed that we all decided we didn't like it anymore. But,
that's what I feel like.
But my friend Christy Lemire went on some radio TV show and said she hated it, and like tons of people called in and were like furious about it. So, I know we all like Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, but do we like
it's
the movie?
My saving grace when you go to Cancun Airport. As soon as I'm at the Bubba Gump Shrimp, I know I'm like 20 minutes from ending my soon to be hangover.
We were just in Monterey over the last week, and I was just like, you know, I bet you were kind of like, see a Bubba Gump like any second now, like on the shoreline.
Or a
we talked about like how much seaside property has Bubba Gump colonized in the world at this point. Anyway, but back to actual movies.
Yeah, I have never revisited Forrest Gump. I did like it the first time I saw it, but when I think
did you cry?
I did cry.
But yeah, see.
But here's the thing. Also, throughout the entire film, I kept thinking these song choices are hilarious.
Yeah.
Robert
yeah.
Zemeckis is having us on with these, and then I later realized, oh no, he's not. No, these are just super on the nose,
yeah.
obvious
it's
choices.
It's very half-fisted.
You know?
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
pretty basic. He's not super. Always letting you know. He's yeah. he's at least he doesn't pretend to be anything more than who he is.
But he used to be cooler. Like when? Used Cars, Romancing the Stone,
yeah.
I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Oh.
Robert Zemeckis was cooler.
Didn't he do Peggy Sue Got Married?
No, it was Coppola. But he did Back to the Future.
That's why Peggy Sue Got Married is so... Oh, yeah, of course. He did that. But like, that's why Peggy Sue Got Married is so... makes me want to cry the entire time. When they get to, when she gets to her grandmother, oh, God. I just...
Lately, the I'm trying to think, like, what have I been the weird outlier on? You know, I a lot of internet fanboy types got very mad at me for not liking the Warcraft movie, but that was one where I think most other critics had my back, so I'm okay with
that. Yeah, I'm not sure that that's popular enough to be regarded through this meme lens that we have.
Not. Yeah. I mean, you know, I was certainly part of that whole, like, you know, accused of getting checks from Marvel because I didn't like Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, or Suicide Squad. And I was like, I hated those movies for free, I promise you.
There are quite a few folks who kind of dissed Wonder Woman on the thread on Facebook. Actually.
I was really shocked by that, though, to be honest.
Didn't like Baby Driver. That's my outlier this year.
That you didn't like Baby Driver.
I didn't like Baby Driver.
I wanted to see it, but nobody else around me did. So, I mean, I wonder if my opinion about wanting to see it was unpopular fundamentally. And all you had to do was say you liked it for people to accept you in these critical worlds.
It's hard. I don't know. It was, you know, they showed it at South by Southwest, which was the perfect place to show it. Yeah. It was totally, you know, talk about your sweet spots. Because it is a music-driven Edgar Wright movie. So, like, the totally right group of white male critics were in that room seeing that movie and, like, going bananas over it. And it didn't work for me much at all.
But back to sort of the topic of Wonder Woman, I mean, I also can see how it's very easy for some people to be like, oh, yeah, I like the first 20 minutes or whatever, but the rest of it.
Hated,
like,
that ending.
Hated
right.
it, blah, blah, blah. Although it is the highest grossing film. Well, no, it's not. It's the second highest grossing film.
Despicable Me 3, I think.
I heard it's Beauty and the Beast live action was number one. Globally.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was thinking of the summer, but maybe
that's
right.
Impressive. There's a couple of things that are wrong with the movie, but I feel like next time around, she's going to have more control. I'm trying to be nice about it. Like, there are some parts of the movie that were so lit dark, that it was hard to, even with as brilliant as some of the colors would be, it was just too low for the lighting. Mm-hmm. And that bugged me a lot about the movie. It kept taking me out of it. But that was the only thing that I thought was wrong with the movie. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that people, more people didn't hate the movie. I think it had a watershed of, like, positive press before the negative comments started filtering up.
It definitely, I think anything that people love that much en masse, that's where unpopular opinions, you know, start coming from. Because
I don't like Titanic.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
take.
I'm sort of more, like, lukewarm to Titanic.
I know what it's doing and I know how shameless it is, but it's doing it all the right ways.
It's just really fucking long, I think. I mean, you know, but beyond that, it's also
4 hours or 3.5 hours.
Something like that. But I mean, it was just sort of like,
when it's on television, it's 5 hours.
Yeah,
It was actually, no, I remember this. It was 3 hours and 15 minutes because when they originally released the movie, they said it was 2 hours and 75 minutes. Like, we weren't going to do the math
that's
on that
right.
one.
Yeah, that's
evil.
That's evil. That's evil.
Nice try, Paramount.
Well, so earlier, just a few takes back, Winter mentioned that she thought, like, Zemeckis was so basic in his music choices for Forrest Gump and all that, or basic AF. And I did want to propose a theory here about a show that it can be kind of controversial, pop culture opinion-wise, and that is How I Met Your Mother. Right?
Never saw it.
And so, but I, you know, so I actually recently just, like, binged the whole damn thing because I watched it kind of interstitially, like, when it was on. It was, you know, it had a certain dullness to it. But my theory is that it is, if not the exact genesis of basicness, period, like, that it is one of the first pop culture specimens that gave us, like, everything basic all encapsulated into one show. And I think that's part of why, like, people really took to it in the aughts and the teens.
There's, I think, this magical formula about sitcoms that people just want to not think too much for 30 minutes. And it's the opposite of what we say about Seinfeld being cerebral or Frasier. You know, there's a reason that Kevin James keeps getting sitcoms.
Yeah.
And it is just like people want this sort of half hour of comfort that's not going to contain a single surprise, but that it's just going to be sort of mildly amusing enough to keep them watching. And I get that impulse. Like,
but don't people want more?
Here's the thing.
Don't you want more?
When I sit down in front of the TV and I have a gajillion options in front of me, and if there are those times where I just don't feel like exerting the mental energy
on something. That's what Real Housewives is for.
Well, that's when I watch American Housewife.
Okay.
The ABC sitcom with Katie Mixon. That is like this perfect little half hour nugget of funny enough. And I like her. Never saw them. No.
Okay, so we're starting to run out of time, but I want to know if there's any rapid fire unpopular opinions you want to throw into the mix here.
I mean, I always say this. I love Freddie Got Fingered.
Dave White does too.
Yeah, I love that movie.
And
Pootie Tang. I hate Pootie Tang. But Freddie Got Fingered is so fucking stupid.
I laugh.
And it's high concept stupid.
Right.
High concept stupid is its own thing.
They gave him money to make this.
Trademark that phrase, high concept stupid.
High concept stupid. Yeah. It's like so, Rip Torn is just brilliant in it.
Winter says I bring this up too often, but it gets thrown at me a lot. I gave a good review to Movie 43 when it came out. A film that no one remembers, but I was very alone in the cold and thinking, hey, you know what? I laughed enough times that this was worth seeing.
Yeah.
That was such an easy well to drink from.
I mean, I think that my... Okay, I like Ed Sheeran's music.
Wow!
Ooh.
Why?
But I do not like Ed Sheeran.
Right. You can't... No, that doesn't qualify. Most people feel the same way. I feel the same way about Chris Brown.
I mean, I think that it's, you know... I feel that for me, I'm almost, like, genetically predisposed to, like... appreciating Ed Sheeran's music. He is the most popular musician in the Philippines currently. Like, his music is so... It's, like, kind of that mix of poppy and then there's some balladry. And there's
I thought Bruno Mars would have been really popular in the Philippines.
Well, Bruno is obviously huge and he's beloved, but, like, if you look just at the kind of money figures... Ed Sheeran is a sensation. He's like part of every karaoke repertoire at this point.
I would be so thrilled if I was huge in the Philippines.
Right?
Yes.
Because you know.
That's true love.
That's true loyalty forever and ever.
Every time I would go there, I'd have a different house I could eat at. The mom and the grandma.
Oh, and then you could become the spokesperson for Jollibee.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's the dream.
I want to speak Tagalog in a commercial.
Oh, girl, I'll bring you over.
Let me know.
They love that.
Let me know.
I mean, honestly, the thing is, like, he's still super popular, even with the shenanigans of his posse who are making fun of Filipinos and calling them monkeys and everything like that. And so this is real difficult one. It's painful for me to admit.
But musically, he's the How I Met Your Mother of pop.
Exactly.
He's a warm bath.
Yeah.
So there you go. I am a basic butch. And I secretly am imbibing these things.
Okay.
Okay. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like...
Why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about butts.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too. Butts, 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 butts.
No. You change your mind.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And before we get into jams this week, I just want to remind everyone, it's now or never to throw in your pick for Song of the Summer in the Pop Rocket Facebook group. We're going to meticulously comb through every suggestion, and we're going to pick our favorites next month. I know it's a bleak-looking season, but a lot of you have a lot of passionate opinions, and you know, I think it's time now to start making your closing arguments. So look for the Song of the Summer thread that Guy started on our Facebook page. So you know what the question we ask every week is. Alonzo, what's that question?
What's your current jam?
What is your current jam, Alonzo Duralde?
You know, I should have probably warned you guys when I started this gig. I'm going to keep my What I'm About's as fresh as possible, but my jams are all going to be ancient.
Ancient? Okay, good.
I'm
carbon dated, like, earlier than Kylie Minogue?
Yes, like from the greatest hits of Pangea. My musical taste is so, like, stopped developing a long time ago. But I've been thinking about the whole summer jam thing, and
it's a debacle.
This has not been a great year for it. But when I think about songs of summer, it's like there's the ones that, you know, you actually associate with summer directly because it was the song that played when you were in the pool and, you know, going on the diving board or whatever. But then there's other ones that, for me, I think have a really sort of evocative sense of the season and of specific things happening. And this song for me captures that end of the barbecue where you're all sitting around with a full belly and an adult beverage and the light is disappearing from the sky and you're starting to light those citronella candles to keep the mosquitoes away. And I don't know, there's just something about it to me that just this song totally says summer. So it's Miss Rosemary Clooney in the cool, cool, cool of the evening.
Oh, it's a barbecue. Sam wants to boil a ham. Grace votes for bouillabaisse stew. Jake wants a weenie baked steak and a layer cake. He'll get a tummy ache too. We'll rent a tent, a teepee. Let the town crier cry. And if it's RSVP,
Jake wants a weenie bag.
Jake is the scandal of the neighborhood.
Well, I want to hang out when you light the citronella candle sometime. You can play Rosemary Clooney the whole time.
Oh, it's on Karen Thompson.
All right. There better be more desserts from your hubs.
Oh, yeah. That you can guarantee that.
Okay, Winter Mitchell, have you got some things to throw down
I
the
have
gauntlet
an announcement.
Here? Okay.
I'm throwing down the gauntlet. Because Guy's not here. That's the only time I can get away with this. It's when he's not here during the summer and I just take over on
He
this
holds
segment.
That gauntlet to his chest.
To his chest.
We need to have like a horns effect for like da 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 da.
No, we need an air horn like a nightclub. Exactly. So Calvin Harris's album. I'm nominating three albums. I'm playing one song from the album that's my favorite right now. But I'm nominating entire albums for Song of the Summer, and then you guys can pick what you like, and then we'll do a separate poll for that. I'm gonna hijack the summer jam to a poll.
Sweepstakes
just to a poll. I just want to see what people think about these three albums. Funk Wave Bounces Volume 1 by Calvin Harris. It's just an amalgamation. It's a bunch of different him partnering up with different DJs. He's got some Katy Perry stuff, DJ Khaled stuff. It's all over the place. It's Frank Ocean. It's amazing. It's really good driving music. Total driving music. House of Discipline by Yellow Alex. He's this local artist. He just doesn't have much of a social media presence, but they've been playing his album a lot on NPR, and I love it, and it's really good. All the tracks are really good. And then I think this is an unpopular opinion based on what people are saying, but Arcade Fire's Everything Now is, to me, a very good album.
My Facebook friend group would beg to differ, apparently. I haven't heard any of it, but I've been seeing a lot of squawking about how this album is not cutting it.
I've
seen split
really?
Opinions. Yeah, I mean, and I have a lot of music journo friends, so I think that there's a lot of actually vigorous debate about whether or not this album is good or, you know, whether
it
it's
a bust. It reminded me of if Radiohead went pop.
Mm.
Like, what
that sounds like
sound
kind of
like
fun.
It? Or if Coldplay got good. You know?
Yeah.
Like that. So,
oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. So Creature Comfort is the song that I picked, and we can play that one.
Some girls hate themselves. Hide under the covers with sleeping pills. And some girls cut themselves. Stand in the mirror and wait for the feedback. Wait for the beat.
aspects of it that sound a little bit like the Killers' new album.
Yeah,
too,
it's
right?
good.
But they're all kind of cross. They're all kind of meeting at this sort of simple. I'm not simple, but Talking Heads ish place.
Is MGMT still around? Because that's what I was getting.
No, I think they are not. They can't be right.
Probably not.
Probably not.
They can't all be in the same era.
That's like I'm a robot in them, and it's like who? Where are they now?
Well, you heard it. Arcade's new album, Arcade Fire's new album is good, and that's the song to listen to on that album.
Yeah.
We've got three choices, folks, so listen up and join Winter's
My
Bowl.
Little resistance, summer jam.
Hashtag summer jam, hashtag resist. Yeah. So my jam this week is kind of driving through the Redwoods. A little jam.
Oh, yeah,
and
you just did that.
Yeah, I just did that or some version of it. Definitely, we did our like little Big Little Lies honeymoon.
Sure.
Up in Monterey.
Without the violence.
Without the violence. Without the violence or the Bubba Gump. we saw lots of wonderful whales. And anyway, like this really kind of washed over me in a very kind of luxuriant indie pop away, and it made me think, like, you know, if Wappler's not going to be there to put songs like this in the jam session, I am. So this is Big Thief's Haley from their recently
That's
released
sweet.
Album Capacity. So I really love the singer-songwriter Adrian Lenker's voice, and she is the lead of this Brooklyn-based indie folk band. She's originally from Minneapolis. And, I mean, don't you just sort of hear that coming over the credits of Transparent any day now?
I was going to say, I could see Shailene Woodley driving to that with the
exactly.
sun, like, flaring on the windshield.
Yeah, a lot of sun flares.
Yes.
And then, boom, credits.
Desaturated colors.
Exactly. Mm. So I was, you know, sometimes we need those vibes. And Wappler, that goes out to you. You might be having
it's
your
like
baby right now.
It's like a little fairy
it's
singing
true,
it,
right?
Isn't it?
It is. It's very
it. It's
fairy-like.
So Wappler-esque.
Going out to Wappler and all the music supervisors
yes.
listening.
Yes.
Well, you have been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted this week by moi, Karen Thompson, your dyke about town, with Winter Mitchell and Alonzo Duralde. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Miso, so thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to SeanBabe14, or ShanBabe14, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, for the 5-star review in iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us, and Sean appreciates our online fan community, so, you know, if you do too, you might want to get on there and review us now. So get in touch with us on Twitter, we're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and enter the discussion. We're a product of MaximumFun.org, and our producers are Kara Hart and the wet hot Christian Duendes.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.